This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. This is going to be a big hour. Carlos Shimkus will be joining us. But most importantly, you'll have an opportunity to join me at 1-866-408-7669. There's so many moving parts today. The president's in action. He's also got another major victory, as well as the Epstein story still percolating on the side. And I also think that, as Allison just brought up to me right here, I cannot believe that the Senate's going to leave something like 50 nominations on the back burner, dozens of judges, 23, I think, on the back burner and just go on vacation for a month. I did not know this, but I think last session that Schumer was the majority leader, which I think was last year or the year before, he kept everybody 2 extra weeks in order to get some nominations through. I think the president's got to do the same exact thing. What I think is absolutely hysterical is what other stations are doing. They're suddenly interested in the Epstein case. The only reason they're interested in the Epstein case is because Trump wants to move on from it. And they think they have the first story in Politico is this is the case that they finally, I think the headline is the Democrats have their mojo back on the Epstein case. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Do you specifically condemn Hamas, a designated terrorist organization?
It's disingenuous to ask about condemning Hamas while Palestinians are the ones being starved now by Israel.
That is Mahmoud Khalil. Disingenuous. Colombia finally cracks down on their campus rioters. And their ringleader admits, when it comes to Hamas, and I'm talking about Khalil, he's a fan. Khalil is not only not apologetic for his pro-terror stance, he's suing Trump for wrongful imprisonment.
Number two.
But I just signed the largest trade deal in history. I think maybe the largest deal in history with Japan. I always say it has to be great for everybody. It's a great deal. A lot different from the deals in the past, I can tell you that.
Well, Donald Trump gets another one done. This one is our fifth biggest trading partner. Trump on a roll as he reels off two more trade deals before the August 1st deadline. And the other one was Philippines, which is not a small one, as he segues today to AI. And now he plans to harness the mighty technology responsibly.
Number one.
It's the art of deflection coming from former President Obama, as well as his friends who are still in Congress today, and Senator Warner and Congressman Jim Himes, really all basically saying that exact same statement.
Tulsi Gabbard, DNI. Obama hits back at Trump after Tulsi exposes papers revealing an alleged plot to overthrow Trump as he took power in his first term, with more whistleblowers promised in papers set to be released. In fact, just as I was coming on the air, Allison, if you want to print it out on digital, Fox News Digital, Brooke Singman just has a story now about more paperwork that's coming out on this story. We go over the new and what is not new. And of course, you have the Epstein story, as I'm watching these other channels just show all the pictures of Trump and Epstein in the 90s. Yes, he was friends with Epstein in the 90s. So was almost every CEO and celebrity. And that's why he was at his wedding, because he was also part of the Palm Beach crowd. You know who else also had a lot of famous friends? O.J. Simpson. You know who was found out? He murdered two people, and he was a domestic abuser and a cocaine abuser. That changed things, but they didn't know that. And everyone with O.J. Simpson, including Leslie Nielsen, who was in Naked Gun, should you be condemned for that? Just keep that in mind. Epstein, for a long time, was considered just a high-rolling financier who controlled a lot of money with the most powerful people on the planet. So that's who Epstein's about. But the reason why people care about it now is because they're trying to link it to Trump, because they were friends. And there was supposed to be this whole MAGA investigation into who was really behind Jeffrey Epstein. And was he a agent? But the other story that I think is thoroughly unrelated, is when Tulsi Gabbard came out and said on multiple shows now, starting late last week, that paperwork has emerged to show that right after the 2016 election, right before and right after, the perception of what Russia was doing totally changed. And in meetings in the Oval Office, led by Barack Obama, attended by Joe Biden and James Comey and John Brennan and Susan Rice, at least, maybe more, they came up with this collusion illusion. And the collusion was that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin and their sycophants combined to win an election and to expose her emails, Hillary Clinton. And for 4 years, all we heard is how Donald Trump's an illegitimate president from Hillary Clinton herself. The guy didn't infiltrate any election machines. He didn't affect any election. They took out Facebook ads. What they exploited, exported, or didn't. I think the story is the collusion that jailed George Papadopoulos, that jailed Paul Manafort, that ruined Michael Flynn, that destroyed Senator Jeff Sessions, eventually Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who foolhardily pushed for Robert Mueller to be a special prosecutor and really did detriment to our country and Donald Trump specifically in the first term. Trump is angry. Cut one.
There should be very severe consequences for that. You know, when we caught Hillary Clinton, I said, you know what? Let's not go too far here. It's the ex-wife of a president, and I thought it was sort of terrible. And I let her off the hook, and I'm very happy I did. But it's time to start after what they did to me. And whether it's right or wrong, it's time to go after people.
And so we're just saying, look, you made up this whole story. You gave the perception that I was an illegitimate president. You've cost my family's business. Eric and Don had to lawyer up and everybody else, 400, let alone, I think they were even after Ivanka for a while. And remember, it looked like for a while that Jared Kushner was going to jail, did absolutely nothing wrong. It cost their family an estimated $400 million, cost the country $40 million. Tulsi Gabbard, cut five.
It's the art of deflection coming from former President Obama, as well as his friends who are still in Congress today, and Senator Warner and Congressman Jim Himes, really all basically saying that exact same statement, which doesn't actually address the issue that was revealed in great detail in the over 100 documents that we released last week, in the documents that we will be releasing later this week, that point to the undeniable fact that you laid out in your introduction to this segment, is that the intelligence community had one assessment, that Russia did not have the intent or capability to try to impact the outcome of the U.S. election leading up to Election Day.
And what they said is, there's two things going on here. One is, what did Russia do, and what didn't they do? And then, instead of an isolated investigation, which the Senate did, they just tried to link it to Trump. And was it Barack Obama, crestfallen? I still remember him addressing all the staff after Hillary Clinton lost, basically saying, well, you know, there's going to be another day and we'll get a chance to get this back, essentially. But behind the scenes, was he making sure that Donald Trump did not have a successful presidency? Patrick Rodebush, the spokesperson for President Obama, did the unusual thing and answered yesterday in a written statement. Out of respect for the office and the presidency, our office does not normally dignify the constant nonsense and misinformation flowing out of the White House with a response. But these claims are outrageous enough to merit one. These bizarre allegations are ridiculous and a weak attempt at distraction. Nothing in the document issued last week undercuts the widely accepted conclusion that Russia worked to influence the 2016 presidential election, but did not successfully manipulate any votes. These findings were affirmed in a 2020 report by the bipartisan Senate Intelligence Committee. Yes. When you realize that in September, you concluded that permanently in December, but you have James Comey cornering President-elect Trump saying, hey, we got this dossier. I'm not sure if you know it or not, but we're investigating whether it's true. I don't really know if it's true. When Christopher Steele, the author of it, just said, this is speculation that came to us from our sources in Russia that I have that was never meant to be published and put into the intelligence portfolio to decide if Donald Trump was colluding with Russia. So that's the other major story going on right now. Remember, here's what Barack Obama said December 16th, 2016. Cut four.
I can assure the public that there was not the kind of tampering with the voting process that was a concern and will continue to be a concern going forward, that the votes that were cast were counted. They were counted appropriately. We have not seen evidence of machines being tampered with. So that assurance I can provide.
So Senator Lindsey Graham, who was part of, I believe, the Intelligence Committee in the Senate when President Trump won the first time around, said that he's looking at all this stuff again. And this is what he has been led to. And he's going to join us at some point today. Cut 16.
They were out to get Trump. They were out to try to keep him from winning. And once he won, they were trying to tear the guy down based on a bunch of BS. We're not going to quit looking at it. We should look at it. And this new information is very important because now we know that before Trump got sworn in, Obama didn't like the storyline that was being reported to him. There's no Russian effort, credible effort to change the election. He said, look at that again. And all of a sudden, the storyline changes.
And then Trump playing a role with it. Paul Manafort. Oh, he had Eastern European ties and bragged to people that he's going to have influence with President Trump. Oh, George Papadopoulos was in England and came across an ambassador and talked about Hillary Clinton's links to Russia. And then Michael Flynn, who was duped by the FBI, came over and asked some questions. Did you get a call when on vacation in Puerto Rico, I believe, or Costa Rica, I forgot which one, from a Russian ambassador? He goes, yeah, I talked to him about how we're going to have relations. And I talked to him about the UN resolution that was coming through that we are going to abstain from. And I'm going to fix it when I get in there about something condemning Israel. It's hard to keep them straight. Next thing you know, Michael Flynn is out. All these people are out. And Michael Flynn, they said, ostensibly was out because when Mike Pence asked him, did you ever deal with a Russian agent or person or ambassador, he said no. And then Trump says, all right, you didn't tell Mike Pence the truth, so I'm going to have to let you go. That was a huge mistake. So it's crazy times. And I don't want to spend this whole time looking back. And you could say, well, the president doesn't want to talk about Epstein. You're right, he doesn't. And they're going to look into it. They're going to talk to Ghislaine Maxwell, and they're doing that. Okay, they're going to move forward on that. But I have to tell you something. When you look into Epstein, there's going to be more Democrats linked up with this guy than anybody else or their donors. We come back. Your calls, 1-866-408-7669. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
People think of crack as being dirty. It's the exact opposite. When you make crack, what you're doing is you're burning off all the impurities so that it combines with the sodium bicarbonate, which makes it smokable. That's all. You know, all of these actors and, you know, people in the past that talked about, they had a problem with cocaine and freebasing. They were smoking crack.
So straw on the stove is the same thing?
Not exactly, but close to it. But it's a little bit different. But anyway.
He is such a disaster. He is such a disaster. I mean, he's actually trying to rationalize crack use. It's just got a bad rap, right? He says, I'm very proud I haven't used anything since 2019. Does anyone believe that? And then when you see the difference in his demeanor between the Jamie Harrison podcast, and that, of course, is Hunter Biden, and the podcast that he just had with this other guy, Callahan, 4.5 hours total, that's a dramatic behavior change. Dramatic. I'm not going to accuse anyone of anything, but if you have a history of drug use and he just can't believe that people are trying to stick him with the cocaine story in the White House in a cubbyhole, why are people there? I was never there. Why are you pretending like you were never at the White House? You basically had no job and you seem to be living there at the White House. I think my theory is 100% correct. I talked about that on social media in previewing the show. I don't think Hunter Biden was greenlighted by the family to go do this stuff, to change the narrative or anything like that. They're seeing the whole Joe Biden, who was really running the country, and the whole auto pen scandal. You don't send Hunter Biden out there to fix things by, get this, making up a story about the president, his dad, using Ambien before the debates. Ambien's supposed to bring you down. He said, my dad was exhausted, so he took Ambien, and he was a deer in the headlights when he was out there on the stage at the debate. And then when asked by Jonathan Carl of ABC, he said, no, I'm not saying he took Ambien, but I'm saying that Ambien, if he was on Ambien, that would explain his behavior. He was not acting like himself that day. So don't tell me that Hunter Biden was out there to fix things. He was not out there to fix things. And if he was, they are stupider than I thought. You take out your crackhead son who caused so much angst for you because he dropped off the laptop and forgot to pick it up and probably forgot he was there. Here's what he said about his dad's debate performance, cut 38.
And I'll tell you what, I know exactly what happened in that debate. He flew around the world, basically, in the mileage that he could have flown around the world 3 times.
Yeah.
He's 81 years old. He's tired as shit. Give him Ambien to be able to sleep. He gets up on the stage, and he looks like he's a deer in the headlights.
So, okay, why would you make that up? Why would it, unless it exactly happened. So the next day, he says, I have no idea whether or not he used Ambien while traveling through multiple time zones, Hunter said, in the weeks leading up to the debate. My point was that his debate performance was completely out of character then and now. Do you think that is, is this guy the biggest train wreck in the world? How about the decision, which is underappreciated, that after his dad wins the election, and they have 51 intel agents sign off saying the laptop was real. He knew it was his. It said a Bo Biden sticker was on it for Bo Biden's foundation, his brother. At that point, I'm pretty sure he had left his wife for his brother's widow. I know. And then at some point, a little bit later, he gets another woman pregnant. He never acknowledges the kid. He had to be sued. But meanwhile, he releases a book, at which time even friendly interviewers say, by the way, was that your laptop? He goes, I don't know. I don't know. Out of all the explanations, I don't know should not have been one of them. I don't know if it was my laptop. Ladies and gentlemen, does anyone you know have a laptop or a phone that they don't know if it's theirs or not? Do you ever wake up in the morning, look at your phone and go, is this mine? Or your desktop? Is this desktop mine on my desk? Is this laptop in my hand actually mine? Not really sure. I'm going to ask Carly Shimkus that. Does she ever find herself in a position where she's holding one of her personal devices and think to herself, is this mine with all my personal information on it? I wonder if someone substituted it with all my information on it and gave me something else in my hand. Why don't we just bring it to the repair shop and forget about it? So, this is the guy that makes all these decisions and decides to trade on his dad's name with international business deals in China, Ukraine, Romania, and then deny it while linking all of his cohorts up with it. Crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy that we still have to deal with the Biden family. Does anybody who he eviscerated ever going to help him or show up at a Biden event for his library or anything, the donating of his papers? No. He alienated everyone on behalf of his family. Good job, Hunter.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's 5 questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Deputy Attorney General has reached out to Ghislaine Maxwell's attorney asking for a new interview.
Yeah, I don't know about it, but I think it's something that sounds appropriate to do, yeah.
Do you have any concern that your Deputy Attorney General, as your former attorney, would be conducting the interview, given...
No, I have no concern. He's a very talented person. He's very smart. I didn't know that they were going to do it. I don't really follow that too much. It's sort of a witch hunt, just a continuation of the witch hunt.
And that is President Trump yesterday taking some questions about the decision to have Todd Blanche, the deputy attorney general, go visit Ghislaine. Ghislaine Maxwell in prison, who was a longtime confidant, girlfriend of Jeffrey Epstein, who was friends with Donald Trump early on in the 90s and, you know, into 2006. And they stopped talking. But now they want to say that this is Trump's new Achilles heel, that he's trying to avoid the subject. Yeah, he does not want to talk about this. There's no benefit to talking about this. And there's so many other things going on. Carly Shimkus is here, co-host of Fox and Friends First, and author of the book she's constantly selling, Cooking with Friends.
Hi. Eat, well, thank you for that plug.
Yeah.
I want everybody to eat, drink, and
be merry. Right? Yes. I'm in that picture.
Yes, you are.
Right.
Remember that photo shoot? That was like 2.5 years ago.
You came off... Well, it was maternity.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
You came off maternity. I hadn't seen you for the longest time, and you claimed to have had this child, and then you come back just for the photo shoot. Then you went back to maternity.
Yeah, because it was like 4 weeks after I gave birth.
Right.
And there you are. And I fed you during the photo shoot.
so inappropriate, right? Oh my god. So I'm watching every channel. I mean, there's Epstein's on every channel now.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah.
And they don't care. They didn't care about this for 15 years.
It is true. And you can understand where President Trump is coming from in that clip that you just played, where he was like, what they're doing on this is fine by me. He wants transparency. He's always said it. But to him, it genuinely feels like such a nothing burger. Why are we talking about this when he's had so many policy successes recently?
So you know what it reminds him of? The Russia investigation, the impeachment, the thing with Ukraine and the phone call. It reminds him of the whole thing with New York City and the whole thing with Stormy Daniels. And then the documents case and then whatever they were saying in Georgia. And he's saying, really? You're going to go Trump? I'm not even going to pay attention to it now. I got the job.
Yeah.
I'm doing the job. I'm not talking about something of a guy that killed himself 6 years ago. You know who said that? Kesh Patel and Dan Bongino said that. And that's the beginning of the fallout. We haven't heard much about it since.
Yeah, you know, it's so true. I feel like there would have been a time in President Trump's political career where he could go all out on this. Because when he feels like he's being unfairly targeted, no matter who's targeting him, he's a fighter. He punches back. But I think that if as far as a man of his age can mature, he just by him going through this so many times, he says that's a distraction and I'm just going to do my job now. So there's political maturity that, you know, he's displayed during his second time in office.
Yeah. So Alan Dershowitz has claimed that Maxwell knows everything about Epstein's perverted crimes, describing her as the Rosetta Stone.
Yeah, well, obviously, right?
Epstein's drama bursts back into the front pages, as you know. And why this blows me away, that Alan Dershowitz, who worked so hard to get his name disassociated with...
Yeah, I was wondering that, too. Yeah, like, and now he's talking about it again.
Everywhere.
And he's a part of this story, right? He was friends with Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, Brian, my opinion of the story is similar to that, I guess, of President Trump's, where I think that there are so many more important and interesting things that are going on right now, that this one just feels a little bit like, horrific, obviously, what happened, but the way that it's being brought back into the news today, where it's, you know, it's trying to be used as a political cudgel doesn't interest me at all.
All right, I hear you, and I'm going to change subject. I just want you to hear what Jonathan Turley said about with Todd Blanche going to visit her in prison, what it means. Cut 36.
Well, there's a certain degree of emergency management going on here. The administration wants to show the public it's doing everything it can to release any information that might still be withheld. The problem is that some of us are rather skeptical that there is something significant with Maxwell being withheld. If so, the expiration date on this milk ran a long time ago. I mean, she's been interviewed repeatedly by the Justice Department. Department. She's had interactions with other legal teams. It would be very surprising if she was holding on to something that was a game changer. But the problem is that this is the type of scandal that the public simply is skeptical of getting the interpretation of evidence as opposed to the evidence itself. The only thing that is likely to quell some of these doubts is near total transparency.
So that was Jonathan Turley. Here we go. And this is going to be, to see like Senator Chris Coons of Delaware talking about the Epstein case, we got to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah,
come on.
Right.
You know he has no interest in that.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess the questions that people have are, did he kill himself? Did he not? And Kash Patel has said definitively that yes, he has.
Okay.
That's what he's saying.
And that's the least controversial thing.
But the other thing is the list, the Epstein client list that... I mean, that was promised, right? I mean, people were saying within the Trump administration that it was promised, and that so far has not appeared anywhere in the white binder. So that was really strange.
All right. So you indulge me for that. Let's just talk about something that, you know, sadly, that you and I care about, that we kind of laugh because it's not the sexiest topic in the world. But when the president announces Liberation Day, he's going to redo these trade deals. Last time it was just the USMCA and some tariffs. This time it's about 90 new trade deals. Now he says, no, I'm looking for the top 10, and then the rest will just, I'm going to give them blanket tariffs. Yesterday, about 4 or 5 o'clock, we see this note about Japan.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's huge news, especially because Japan was giving the Trump administration such a difficult time, and the president had already signaled, and he got really frustrated in a True Social post, worded in a comedic way about, like, they're not accepting our rice. They're not accepting our rice. But that was a huge deal. And also one of the big issues was the car tariff. So that deal has been signed. And I just always go back to the initial reaction of everybody who is in the know when it comes to things economically and politically. And they say that this is going to be the downfall of the Trump administration. All of these tariffs, and the president comes out with this big poster board of reciprocal tariffs, and people were making fun of it. Well, the upside is what is happening right now, albeit at a slower pace than I'm sure anybody would like to see. But you can't tell me that this isn't positive for the U.S. economy and the future of the country.
Fifth biggest trading partner. So the largest deal yet. Japan will invest $550 billion into the United States, and we will receive 90% of the profits. The deal will create hundreds of thousands of jobs. There's also been anything like it, he said. Japan will open up their country to trade, including cars, trucks, and rice, and our agricultural products, and then they'll pay reciprocal tariffs to the United States of 15%. So it's a reconfiguration of an imbalance that had Japan at a $69.4 billion surplus come to our deficit.
Yeah, so I guess F-150s on Japanese roads.
Finally,
Japanese
let's see if they can handle it.
Right?
So here is President Trump on what could be happening today or tomorrow, cut 18.
This deal is, they say, the biggest deal ever made, And we have Europe coming in tomorrow and the next day. We have some other ones coming in. We're doing things that have never been done in this country before. And our country is becoming very rich again. And that's the way it should be. They're not taking advantage of us.
So pretty cool. If Europe comes in, I mean, that's the number one partner, I think. China's number two, where the framework is done. So we'll see where this stays. And now the president is beating up on the Fed chair because the interest rates are too high.
Oh, my gosh,
I think he called him a knucklehead, or what did he call him yesterday?
He did.
Numbskull.
Numbskull. Yeah, it was. Tell us how you really feel about Jerome Powell, whose term is over May of next year, and the president has made it clear that he's not going to, I mean, he literally can't fire him. And I don't think it would be politically savvy for him to do so. He said that he's not going to, but he's putting the pressure on him to lower those interest rates because we have to pay interest on the national debt, and that's a huge deal. And he wants to stimulate the economy in that way. I mean, the $2 billion price tag for the renovations of the Fed. I mean, how do you spend $2 billion,
$2.5
billion dollars on something like
that? And that's what they're trying to use to maybe oust him early, and maybe he'll resign with this type of pressure. But evidently, the Fed chair – the officers don't all agree that the rate should stay the same. What I think makes it sound political, and there's certainly people on the Business Channel that have a much richer knowledge on this, is when he comes out and says, you know, about not raising rates, there's just too much uncertainty with the tariffs. That is a word that's become very political and associated with Trump. Mm-hmm. And he's like, really? Is that a shot at me because of the tariffs? We already have an indication because the market has totally bounced back and surpassed where it was. Things are stabilized. You see the prices of goods pretty even.
Yeah.
So you have your indications. And what I think about more, the home buyers. So if you're a middle class person, you're doing a little bit better and it's time maybe to get a bigger house. Can't really. Got a 3% mortgage. Now, I'm not going to go get a 7% mortgage.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. It's going to be a bigger house, ideally. And now I got to pay more money anyway. And now I'm paying more interest. Honey, we got to stay here. Put the kids in bunk beds.
Those conversations are happening across the country, even with my friends who are thinking about moving from house to house and saying we're going to stay in a smaller home. Because the interest rates are too high. Well, you can always refinance. Well, you're wasting money.
Refinance on what?
And refinance an interest when? Rate. Yeah, exactly. We'll see what happens and who the next Fed chair will be in May of next year. Kevin Hassett.
But if I'm Kevin Hassett or Scott Bessent, I don't want that job because you got to be independent. And you're going to feel so much pressure with your buddy there. And President Trump, if he puts you there, he's going to be like, hey, Scott. Lower the rates. I gave you the job. I would not want that pressure.
Did you hear the president a couple days ago? He's like, it's the easiest job in the world. You have one thing. You just go, you know, you just put the interest rate there and that's what it is. I mean, the target is 2% inflation, right? We're not there. I mean, we're higher than that.
Right.
So, yeah, that should be pointed out. I think that might be a situation where both sides have a bit of a point.
Right. Well, that's nice. It shows you can see both sides of things.
Mm-hmm.
Very fair and balanced. A few more minutes with Coley Shimkus in a moment, including the story last night that really got under my skin that we're going to talk about.
Oh, I can't wait.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Are men afraid of approaching girls now?
Okay, so if they are, do you remember the Me Too movement?
No, I forgot about it.
Totally blacked that one out. Where cis men were public enemy number one. So if this is true, then I think that men have every right to be scared of women. And it's the women's own doing. So now they're sitting alone at bars and thinking maybe we shouldn't have done that.
So it's your fault.
I think so.
I mean, if you mean
me as the collective 50% of the population, women, kind, then yeah, I guess.
Do men approach you cold, out of the blue?
Now I'm married.
But they don't know that and they don't care.
No, I haven't been. No one's actually.
Well, men really are scared.
No,
they're terrified.
Wait a second. I'm starting to feel really bad about myself. I hadn't thought about that before.
I mean, you just said it.
So this is the problem I had. So you and Jesse Waters to find out, you know, not knowing you're going to be on, and then to just go listen to on Sirius Radio, I didn't even see it, and then to hear you have this type of chemistry with another host.
Oh, really, is that what happened?
Really?
Right, I am flattered.
Really, it really made me jealous.
Okay, so I do love am I allowed to say that I love being on Jesse's show?
Because
it's fun.
Yeah.
He is fun to talk to.
Right.
But I also think you're fun to talk to.
But behind the scenes, was there tension? Like, you're going to say, like, he's not really like that? Is there nothing?
No.
You get along with
him too. We were laughing before the segment and after as well.
Wow.
And I sometimes do his quiz, you know, the sink or swim on Fridays.
Right.
And he tries to help me out because I am terrible at that game.
And so there is chemistry, legitimate chemistry.
Well, chemistry.
No, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, we're only talking about work chemistry. I don't care about any other chemistry.
But also, can we focus on the fact that that moment that you just played was the moment I realized that I am a pathetic person?
Because?
Because he was like, when was the last time a man approached you? And I was like, I can't even remember.
Wow.
And he's like, wow, how old are you? And I was thinking to myself, like, not old enough to feel that way.
Well, I will say this. I think there's a point. I don't think there's very few guys I know that were no problem approaching a woman cold ever.
Well, also a married woman. Like some people say, oh, guys don't care. Of course they do.
Right.
Men have a moral compass.
Well, let's say, do you wear your wedding ring when you work out?
Yeah, I really rarely take it off, but I work out in my building. Right, so
but let's say two adults working
and I
out
don't have
through
a
some,
wedding ring.
Yeah. You don't have a wedding ring on, uh-huh. And then someone asks you out. Do you say, "Excuse me, I don't know what you're thinking. How dare you approach me?"
I would never do that.
But
that, that has also never happened to me. I would probably be more flattered and like, "Oh my gosh, that thank you. That's great." I would never. I would obviously never
you
go.
You wouldn't go on the date.
But then I tell my husband, and he'd be like, "Nice, cool."
He would say that.
I probably because,
wow.
because
I don't
it's
think
just
he'd say
because
that.
It's just funny, right? Like it's like, "Oh wow, no, yeah, you still got it."
But Carly, good don't job. You think that he might be saying, "What kind of signals are you sending out?"
No,
no,
no. He's not like that. Actually, one of the initial, not fights at all, but like discussions that we had when we were just dating, as I was like, I mean, that was when I was in my early 20s and when people were, I guess, approaching me because I was more going out and, you know, you're just mm-hmm. in that season of your life. And he would never care. And I'd be like, "Shouldn't you care more?" He's like, "Do you want me to be jealous? Like more jealous? Isn't that like a bad thing?" I was like, "Yeah, I do want that." And then
oh, really?
Yeah. And then I changed my mind and because he showed it. And then he's like, "You told me to do this."
I think it shows he's secure.
Yeah, extremely. Yeah.
And that bothers you a little.
No, I guess it did at the time. But I was also 23 and had no idea what I was doing.
Understood.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something else that you probably don't understand. And that's why putting sugarcane in Coke is a good thing.
Oh, but I do understand.
Do you
that.
Understand that?
Yeah,
but it's just
I think
pure
that's a
sugar.
Great thing.
But we are still talking about sugar,
right?
I know Maha considers this another win. Here's James Quincy, the CEO of on the Claiming Countdown of Coke, Cut 39.
Well, it's one of those ideas that's been bouncing around for a time, but it's not really taken shape and form until we got into this year and actually said, you know what? Maybe the idea. It's one of those ideas whose time has come. So we've been working on it during the year, and as we announced, we're coming in the fall, so we're almost there. I loved your pun on Kane Firm, by the way. That was good.
I did not know he had a British accent.
Right.
But I do you, like this.
Instead of some fake sugar.
Listen, no one is saying that drinking a can of Coke is healthy, but getting the chemicals out of any product is better. So I think that sugarcane is generally considered more healthy than high fructose corn syrup. However, I like what they're doing because some farmers who produce corn were very worried about the switch over to sugarcane, which I think you have to import. So they're doing both. So then you get the option, and more options are better than fewer.
All right, good. Maha considers that another win.
Yeah.
They have a lot. They're getting a lot of these chemicals. A lot of these major companies
yeah.
are doing that. And I saw Casey Mean's brother, Callie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes.
Callie. Yesterday, I was in Washington yesterday, and I go, "Wow, you guys are off to a great start," because he's with the FDA. He said, "Oh, no. You're not going to believe what's coming next."
What's coming next?
So that's what I asked him. He's like, "I can't go over it now, but soon." I said, "That sounds great." So they are just rattling all the food companies to the core by saying, "We're sticking around. We're not kidding. This is real. We got all the levers of power. RFK has some friends on the left, so they know who he's going for. This is pretty big."
I love it. Stick around, America.
Because
we'll find out
doctors
what Callie
never
means.
Talk about nutrition.
Right.
General practitioners don't. So
yeah.
Now we got to do it.
Yes. The heck with the food pyramid.
All right. Carly Shimkus, I can't wait to see you on Waters World again. It'll be great.
You're the best.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
From the Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. Brian Kilmeade coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Senator Lindsey Graham's going to be with us at the bottom of the hour. It's been a while. Chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, member of the Appropriations Judiciary Committee, and his foreign policy is his forte. Josh Holmes, 1/4 of the Ruthless podcast, will be with us shortly. Remember, he was chief of staff to Mitch McConnell for years. There's a big decision now where the Senate is being urged by the president to stay in session so they could get more nominees confirmed. Not so much that now he needs the deputies, the undersecretaries, and the judges, as well as a UN ambassadorship, at least get him through committee and then get a general vote. And until you take the vacation away from Democrats, they're probably not going to budge. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Do you specifically condemn Hamas, a designated terrorist organization?
It's disingenuous to ask about condemning Hamas while Palestinians are the ones being starved now by Israel.
Wow. Mahmoud Khalil, the 33-year-old graduate student who graduated and is so ungrateful, he will not even condemn Hamas and is suing the Trump administration for unlawful or wrongful imprisonment. What he said on CNN will stun you.
Number two.
But I just signed the largest trade deal in history. I think maybe the largest deal in history with Japan. I always say it has to be great for everybody. It's a great deal. A lot different from the deals in the past, I can tell you that.
Trump is on a roll as he reels in two more trade deals before the August 1st deadline, Japan and the Philippines, as he segues today to AI and how he plans to harness this mighty technology.
Number one.
It's the art of deflection coming from former President Obama, as well as his friends who are still in Congress today, and Senator Warner and Congressman Jim Himes, really all basically saying that exact same statement.
Obama hits back hard at Trump after Tulsi Gabbard exposes papers revealing an alleged plot to overthrow Trump as he took power back in 2016. We'll talk about what we're learning. And with us now is Josh Holmes. Josh, welcome back.
Hey, Brian. It's great to be here.
All right. So first off, how does it feel to be at Fox for a week?
Man, it is an absolute blast. I mean, for all you listeners who are wondering if the same people you hear and listen and watch on a day-to-day basis are as good of people, as nice and kind, I can assure you they are. Behind the scenes, it has just been an exceptional reception. We're loving it.
Yeah, I know you guys are all over the channel now, but how do we, just before we get into the topics, how do we get the Ruthless podcast now as opposed to where we got it before?
Same as it ever was, Brian. Same as it ever was. Nothing changes. We're just available in a few more spots on Fox and FoxNews.com and Outkick and everything else. But if you got it from your regular podcast place and YouTube, you can still get it there.
So I want to bring you to what's going on in the college campuses and the trade deals. If you look at what the president's done, I think it's got 70-plus executive orders. He's moving on so many different fronts, one of which I was not expecting, but was the long been a topic, was straightening out the higher education, including the elite education. And he's taken on Harvard, taken on George Mason of late. He's got a deal working now with Columbia, we understand. And now we find out one of the guys that he put, he was set to deport, but the judges jumped in his way, was Mahmoud Khalil. Remember, he was the one leading all the rioting over at Columbia. He was asked on CNN in his Washington, D.C. victory tour, now that he's out of detainment, he was asked CNN to condemn Hamas. Listen to this. Cut 26.
Do you specifically condemn Hamas, a designated terrorist organization in the United States, not just for their actions on October 7th?
I condemn the killing of all civilians, full stop. But what I don't want to get into is... No, I'm very clear with condemning all civilians. I'm very straight in my position in that part. But it's disingenuous to ask about condemning Hamas while Palestinians are the ones being starved now by Israel. It's not condemning October 6th, where 260 Palestinians were killed by Israel before October 7th. So I hate this selective outrage of condemnation, because this is not, this wouldn't lead to a constructive conversation.
She does it two more times. Cannot get him to say it. What does that tell you?
Yeah, pretty straightforward or not straightforward at all. What is clear is that here's a guy who's rewarded with the opportunity to come to the United States of America, and he turns around and basically embraces people who have had an absolute commitment to killing Americans, calls for destruction of Western civilization, essentially. I mean, this is exactly what President Trump has been talking about all along. I mean, you mentioned the college campuses and everything that's been going on there. I mean, I would wager to say it's 70-80% of Americans agree entirely with President Trump, because it's just common sense. You ought to straighten this stuff out. And people who hate our country, it didn't used to be a controversial thing. I mean, everybody was like, okay, maybe it's good if we pay an arm and a leg to send our kid to school, that perhaps they should get an education. And it doesn't seem particularly controversial, but it has taken the leadership of President Trump to raise all of these things and put it back in the public consciousness.
Anti-Semitism raging on campuses. They know if they can't control it, Trump's coming down like a ton of bricks on their heads. This is really changing things. Josh, do you see real change, or are they going to look just to wait out the Trump administration?
Well, I think what has happened is both in terms of college campuses and in terms of corporate America, frankly, it takes leadership to draw out what everybody, or at least the vast majority of Americans, agree with in the first place. If you duck and hide like former President Biden and his administration from real corrosive issues, anti-Semitism, anti-American, anti-Western civilization, it allows it to grow and foster. And the good news is just a little bit of leadership in the other direction, the rest of the country will rally around it. And I think that's what we're seeing.
All right. I want to go to another decision that you're very familiar with if you work for Mitch McConnell, and that is the decision to confirm these deputies, these undersecretaries, and these secretaries to allow administrations to get their feet underneath them. And Chuck Schumer has extended or delayed recess in order to keep senators around to urge them to confirm their nominees. Should Senator Thune do the same thing? Because the president wants him to postpone everybody's vacation, their month recess, in order to get somebody confirmed. Will this work? Do you think Senator Thune should do it?
If this is always the tug and pull between the executive and the Senate when it comes to confirmations. And Trump, once again, has gotten a totally raw deal by the Democrats. I think it is the case that his nominees are the first set of nominees in history to not receive a single unanimous consent agreement, meaning that they wouldn't have to take an up or down vote and they could just be confirmed if they're non-controversial. Democrats don't want to do that, right? But I think there is some context here that's worth examining, which is Thune has taken more votes already on nominees than any of his predecessors or any previous Senate. And I think almost.
But they're behind the Obama pace by a lot.
They're behind because of these package deals that Democrats won't agree to, which, you know, what we used to do back in the day is you'd take 25, 30 nominees that were non-controversial, that flew out of committee on a bipartisan basis, put them together and do an up or down unanimous consent agreement. And so you can just burn through a whole bunch of these nominees without taking 3, 4, 5 weeks of calendar. The piece about the Trump agenda, which is so amazing, by the way, 6 months they've accomplished more than I can ever remember, is it's taken a lot of floor time, right? The big beauty, big beautiful bill, and all of these other things have required an awful lot of attention. So these nominees, if every one of them requires a vote, which Democrats seem to be insisting upon, are going to lag a little bit behind. And so, look, should they take vacation? Should they not? Absolutely, they should try to get done as much as they can possibly get done. I do think the one piece that is always a little undersold in terms of the public consciousness is you're going to want your senator and congressman at some point to come back and tell you what it is that they've done here. You don't want this permanent class of people to just constantly live in D.C., never get back
home, I hear you.
Hear from your constituents and things like that. So there is a balance to be struck here, but I agree, they're going to have to move these nominees.
So Hunter Biden decides to sit down for two long podcasts, one with Jamie Harrison, who used to run the DNC, the other with this guy, Andrew Callahan, who I guess is has some YouTube success. Don't know much about him. The choices of venues are interesting, but what he said to me is of no benefit if he's looking to help his family rehab their image. Listen to a little of it. For example, what he said about his dad's debate, cut 38.
And I'll tell you what, I know exactly what happened in that debate. He flew around the world, basically, in the mileage that he could have flown around the world 3 times.
Yeah.
He's 81 years old. He's tired as shit. Give him Ambien to be able to sleep. He gets up on the stage, and he looks like he's a deer in the headlights.
Excuse me? Turns out today, he walks back that statement. I didn't say he was on Ambien. I said it's like he was on Ambien. What is he talking about?
It's just A-plus content. I mean, we did a whole thing on Tuesday on Hunter's entire interview on the Ruthless Variety program because we can't get enough of it. The Ambien thing was completely ridiculous. First of all, he was home for a week. It's not more. Actually, more.
Right.
It was more like 10 days before the debate. And, you know, if it was Ambien that threw him off, what happened in the other 364 days of that year where he acted exactly the same way as he did on that debate stage? I mean, it was funny. I got a kick out of it. The content was just A+.
This is what he said yesterday to Jonathan Carl, who called up and says, listen, your dad was on Ambien? That's news. How do you know? He said, I have no idea whether or not he used Ambien while traveling through multiple time zones in the weeks leading up to the debate. My point was that his debate performance was completely out of character then and now. This is the smartest person Joe Biden knows, remember? Can you hurt your dad any more than this? Make up some drug that he's using without a prescription?
He's just winging it, right? And he's clearly pissed off. And the one thing I really appreciate is he's just burning every bridge, right? Whether it's George Clooney or Barack Obama or David Axelrod or the Pod Bros. I mean, all the Democratic establishment is just getting flamethrowed by Hunter Biden, and I'm here for it.
Here is Hunter Biden doing something that I need a clarification on, and that is, how do you make crack, and is it really good for you? Cut 37.
People think of crack as being dirty. It's the exact opposite. When you make crack, what you're doing is you're burning off all the impurities so that it combines with the sodium bicarbonate, which makes it smokable. That's all. You know, all of these actors and, you know, people in the past that talked about they had a problem with cocaine and freebasing. They were smoking crack.
So straw on the stove is the same thing?
Not exactly, but close to it. It's a little bit different.
Well, put it this way. I love the follow-up question. So straw on the stove is the same. So out of all the clarification, as a host, you always try to move the story forward. But that follow-up question, I just am not equipped to ask.
No, and if you take a look at the guy, for those of you who've seen it on YouTube, it's not exactly Edward R. Moreau that he's sitting across from. But, you know, you got to appreciate Hunter Biden's just ride or die mentality. Everything from the defense of his father at all turns, despite our lying eyes, to the relative health impact or benefits of crack versus alcohol. I mean, this guy is a piece of work, everything that we wanted and more. And frankly, like, you know, he's been such a liability for Joe Biden for so long. The fact that he's now just taking the muzzle off and doing these kind of interviews, I want him to come on Ruthless. I mean, can you imagine, Brian, if we had him for an hour?
Put it this way. So, you know, people are saying, well, you know, the president's family want him out there because they're losing the narrative to the auto pen story. Really? So but you do that by instead of going after, you went after Trump. Everyone expects that. But David Axelrod hasn't done anything before Barack Obama. Does the word Deval Patrick mean anything? And by the way, James Carville hasn't won a race since the 90s. Yeah, I know, but he hasn't had to. You won two presidential races. One, he came out of nowhere. I don't mean to sell this guy. And then he goes, here's what he says about George Clooney. And I listen to this 24 hours a day. Listen to this.
I don't have to be nice. Number one, I agree with Quentin Tarantino. George Clooney is not a actor. He is a... I don't know what it is. What do you have to do with anything? Why do I have to listen to you? What right do you have to step on a man who's given 52 years of his life to the service of this country and decide that you, George Clooney, are going to take out basically a full page ad in the New York Times to undermine the president at a time in which, by the way, what do people care about the most? Why do you think that the Republicans have an advantage over us? Because they're unified. They will go along with anything. I wasn't asking anybody to go along with anything. I was asking people to go along with this. The most successful administration in my lifetime.
Right. So, and anyway, I love when he went off. Hey, I hear he has a great house in Lake Como. Good for you. I hear he's nice to his friends. That's fantastic. I mean, just everything. This is just whatever's on his mind.
I could only, when he was doing the whole bit there on Clooney, all I could think of was that internet meme when the worst person you know says something you agree with. That's all that could pop into my head. But on the unification front, I mean, they're sitting in a Democratic Party that managed to unify around somebody that they, in their entirety, agreed in Kamala Harris was both unqualified and totally ill-equipped to run for president. And they circled the wagons as fast as they could get. I'm not sure unification was the problem. It was unification against an 81-year-old who couldn't put two sentences together that was the issue for Democrats.
Very interesting. So just real quick on the Republican Party, it looks like they're outraising big time the Democrats so far in the midterm. It's usually just the opposite. How do you think that the Republicans have the momentum, or do you think this Epstein story could help Democrats?
I don't think the Epstein thing is something that's going to play in midterms. I think they're probably going to deal with that with some transparency here sooner rather than later. The money's great. People are doing a great job. NRSC, SCC, all the super PACs and everything. But I think the bigger piece is the environment's going to dictate a lot. It looks great. You know, I heard in your run-up talking about these trade deals that Trump is putting together.
Yep.
Obviously, the big, beautiful bill was a big deal. If this economy is humming the way that I suspect it will be next year, I think that's the biggest catalyst for electoral success. There is going to be a lot of hard work that needs to be done for Republicans to hold majorities between now and then. But I think the environment is trending the right way.
All right. He is Josh Holmes, and we'll catch up with the Ruthless podcast and his buddies anywhere you can get podcasts. Josh, glad to have you in the family. Look forward to talking to you again.
You're the man, Brian. Really appreciate it.
All right. Remind everybody else that I'm the man, especially along with Jesse or Sean Hannity. All right. I'm going to take them as yes. All right. Bottom line is phone calls next.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So we're back. Just a quick announcement. We want to talk about history, liberty, and laughs, and I want to see everybody on the 23rd of August, BrianKilmeade.com, this beautiful theater, about 2,100 seats. The whole floor is filling up. The second tier is finished. So I hopefully can get you guys either on some of the wings on the floor. The third tier looks fantastic, too. The fourth tier is open. VIP is we've already hit an all-time record, but there's still some room. And Will Cain's going to be coming, trying to get Lawrence Jones to show up. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West will be there. And there'll be some other surprises. But if you want, here we're coming up on a year 250. If you want to go over great moments in America's past from the 7 books I wrote in history and the 2 sports, this is the place to go. So hope to see everybody in person, BrianKilmeade.com. It's also going to be streamed on Fox Nation. You can see some past events, too, to have a clue what you're getting into. Brian Kilmeade Show, don't move. Coming up next, Senator Lindsey Graham.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Does Iran plan to reconstitute its enrichment program? Is it continuing now, or has the damage been so severe that it is all stopped?
It is now stopped because, yes, damages are serious and severe. But obviously, we cannot give up our enrichment because it is an achievement of our own scientists. And now, more than that, it is a question of national pride. Our enrichment is so dear to us, we are ready to engage into negotiation to make sure that our enrichment is only for peaceful purposes.
Exactly. I'm sure Iran only wants enrichment for peaceful purposes. They're concerned about the environment. That's why we put it into the side of a mountain that no one could detect. Let's bring in Senator Lindsey Graham, chairman of the Senate Budget Committee. No one knows more foreign policy leaders than he does. Senator, welcome back. How do you feel about the foreign minister's stance now in Iran?
Well, half truths are better than no truth at all. They don't intend to stop enriching, but not because of national pride, not because of a desire for peaceful nuclear power, because they want a bomb. We know they have 900 pounds of highly enriched uranium, enough to make about a dozen bombs. That enrichment program has not generated 1 gram of uranium to run their one reactor. They get all their fuel for their peaceful reactor from Russia. Their enrichment program makes uranium at 60%, which is a stone's throw to 90%. So all the evidence is contrary to what he said, and the desire to make a bomb by Iran has not been decimated.
So the president said, listen, they start rebuilding it up again, it's an open target. We're going to take another shot at it, essentially. And I know Israel will, too. They have to realize this.
Well, why? Because I think the Iranians are religious Nazis. Maybe not the Iranian people, but the Ayatollah and his henchmen are. They write on the side of their missiles, death to America, death to Israel, and they mean it. So what is a good outcome for the world, Israel and the rest of us? They abandoned their missile program that has been designed to reach out to Israel and beyond, that they stop being the largest state sponsor of terrorism, helping the Houthis, Hezbollah, and Hamas kill the Jews, and they abandon enrichment completely. If they want a peaceful nuclear power program, we can provide them, outside of Iran, spent fuel rods to run their reactor. Spent fuel is enriched to 3 to 5%. The Russians or the Chinese can provide that. There is no good deal that doesn't include their missile program, mm-hmm. their enrichment program, and their support for terrorism. I don't think we're likely to get that. So what happens next? I have legislation putting tariffs on any country that buys oil from Putin and doesn't help Ukraine. Why am I doing that? And I'm trying to go to Putin's customers to get them to push him to the table. I'm going to introduce similar legislation regarding Iran. I'll be soon introducing legislation saying that any country that buys Iranian oil will be subject to American tariffs because you're propping up a terrorist regime, and that will continue until the regime changes their behavior.
Do you think there'll be these snapback sanctions that they're lobbying hard not to have happen? So you think that's going to happen, that Europe's on the same page? What if China and Russia doesn't agree?
Well, Europe, the snapback sanctions really are in the hands of the Europeans. China and Russia didn't sign on. They're in the UN Council, but these sanctions, sort of European-American sanctions. So snapback will happen. So what are we trying to do? We're trying to get the regime to change its behavior. Stop being the largest state sponsor of terrorism. Stop wanting to kill all the Jews. Stop manufacturing weapons for terrorists to be used throughout the world to harass the world. And they have American blood on their hands in Iran. So if we do not reimpose sanctions, and what I'm proposing really is the only thing that will work, I believe. If we tell China and Russia or China and other countries, if you buy Iranian oil to keep this regime afloat, if they don't change their behavior, then we're going to put tariffs on all your products coming into America. That will deliver a mighty blow to the Ayatollah, and that's where I'm headed.
I hear you. And so a couple of things that are going on. We're still waiting on the hostage story. Can you update us on that? I mean, the Qataris are working with us. Steve Witkoff, are we getting closer? We thought it was going to be last weekend.
Yeah. Well, I'm hopeful. Steve is going on over to Europe, and he's worked really hard on this. Then he's supposed to go to Doha. And if you see him in Doha, that's a good sign that we'll reach a ceasefire. But what are we trying to accomplish here? We want the hostages out. That's for darn sure. But we have to succeed in destroying Hamas's capability to govern Gaza, their ability to stay part of the fabric of society in Gaza, because they're a terrorist organization bent on the destruction of Israel. So any deal has to lead to Hamas being completely out of the picture. And that's non-negotiable for Israel.
And by the way, Iran says they told Brett last night, the foreign minister, they're going to continue to fund Hamas and Hezbollah because they're fighting for their freedom. They're freedom fighters. So,
well, here's what I would say. You know the old story, one man's freedom fighter is another person's terrorist.
Yep.
By any objective standard, this regime is terrorist in nature, and they're literally religious Nazis. It's 80 years ago was the end of the war in Europe where the Germans tried to annihilate the Jews. Here you have, 80 years later, a nation state called Iran, who is built around a religious theocracy that compels them to purify Islam, go after Sunni Arabs, destroy the Jewish state, and come after us Americans who are, we're infidels, and drive us out of the region. They believe this stuff. And if they had a nuclear weapon, I am convinced they would use it. So Israel cannot allow that happen, and we should not allow that happen. So call Iran's bluff. They're in many ways all talk. Israel decimated their air defenses between Israel and President Trump, and I admire President Trump so greatly here for destroying Fordow and these other sites. But they will come back. They will continue to try to make a nuclear weapon because they think that is the home run for their regime. So we got to be on alert here. Let Israel continue to bomb if they need to, but offer Iran a deal. But the deal has to be an abandonment of all the things bad they do for it to be accepted by America. And if they turn this deal down, tell China that if you continue to buy Iranian oil, you will lose access to the American economy.
That would be a huge move because he's working so hard to work out a framework on trade, but that's got to be the story. Senator Lindsey Graham, our guest. Senator, the other big story is not going away. 2016, what was going on with Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, John Brennan, James Comey, Joe Biden, and Susan Rice leading up to the Russian collusion illusion and the new information that came out. You were all over this. You thought Senator Sessions had to step aside when he was attorney general because they made up some story that he met with an ambassador while he was senator, and that seemed to be a bad deal. Now, FoxNews.com has just put this out, that the intelligence community did not have any direct information that Russia's Putin wanted to help elect Trump. And they said President Obama took the unusual direction and published a potentially biased or implausible intelligence suggesting otherwise, even though his intelligence said something else. And for the next 2.5 years, what do we talk about? And you on every Sunday show, Donald Trump colluding with Vladimir Putin to win an election. So the president wants indictments. He wants this. Where do you think we go from here?
I think we continue to investigate. So Tulsi Gabbard sent over a package that she wants the Department of Justice to look at for potential prosecution. I lost 2.5 years of my life, like most people in your business did, chasing this, right? When the issue first came up, Jeff Sessions was part of Trump's campaign, and there were some issues about whether or not he could be impartial. And I've tried in my time up here to make sure the law is applied fairly as I know how. And the special counsel was appointed. It was Mueller. Well, it turned out to be the Mueller investigation, one of the saddest chapters in American legal history. It was corrupt. One of the attorneys for the FBI provided false information to the FISA court to get a warrant against Carter Page. He wound up being prosecuted and spent some time in jail. You had the Steele dossier that was produced by Christopher Steele, who was on Hillary Clinton's campaign payroll, that was used to get a warrant against Carter Page 5 times. And the person who provided the information to Christopher Steele told investigators, this is all bar talk. This is all hearsay. It was never meant to be used in a legal system. And they continued anyway. But now what do we know? We know that in October, before the election of 2016, that they started the storyline that Trump, this came from Brennan, was somehow involved nefariously with Russians. This came out before the election, but it didn't get a lot of traction. They tried, but it didn't. Now we know after the election, from November to the time that President Trump was sworn in, Obama presided over meetings and basically said, I don't like the answer here. Go find something new. That to me is stunning. That is a major revelation, mm-hmm. and we should continue to investigate.
So
now, for me, I'm going to sit down and think, do we need a special counsel here? I'm going to get with my staff. I'm going to talk with some of my colleagues. You have from the DNI a package going to the Justice Department, a referral to look at possible criminal violations of the law. Maybe we need a special counsel here. I'll get back with you soon. But this is a big deal. And Republicans, do not be deterred from looking at it. The media sold the Russian hoax as real. Now they're providing cover, and we can't let that happen.
Here's what Congressman Jim Himes said in one of the only times this was an issue on the Sunday shows.
What you saw from the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, was not just a lie, but a very dangerous lie. Because when you start throwing around language like sedition and treason, somebody's going to get hurt. Now, you pointed out that the Senate committee, then led by Marco Rubio, a Republican and now Secretary of State, found unanimously that Russia meddled in the election to try to assist Donald Trump. John Durham, special counsel appointed by Donald Trump, investigated this, found that the Senate report was correct.
So how do you feel about that?
Well, what I would say is the question is, what role did Obama play in directing the intelligence community to reject their findings? With all due respect to the congressman, the intelligence community was telling President Obama in the period between Trump being elected and coming into office, keep looking. There's got to be something there. I don't like the outcome. That's what Tulsi Gabbard found. So I don't remember the John Durham report validating that Russia interfered in the election. I'll be glad to look and see what Marco and these guys said. But I do know that the intelligence community, according to these documents, told Obama there is no evidence of Russia interference in the election. And the storyline changed after Obama said, keep looking.
Evidently, yeah. 2014, they started looking into what Russia wanted to do. In 2016, they found out it was basically Facebook ads. They would try things, but they couldn't do anything. It's too diffuse. They can't affect it. But instead, they tried for 2.5 years to say Donald Trump was an illegitimate president. Everybody knows.
Mueller.
And think about Hillary Clinton all the time. And think about this, how much damage was done to Russian relations. Nobody thinks less of Vladimir Putin than me. But do you realize when he was standing next to Donald Trump and he said, I didn't do all this stuff that they said I did. He was actually telling the truth. That they were coming up with all these tangential stories that he's in Helsinki and the President Trump's getting eviscerated. But he was right. He's like, I believe that he did not infiltrate our elections, and I certainly didn't collude with him.
Yeah, I believe that people have been murdered on his watch that oppose him. I believe he's a war criminal, but I don't believe the narrative that Trump was basically an agent of Russia. It wasn't that Russia was trying to interfere in the election. The storyline was that Donald Trump was up to his eyeball in Russian business deals and was compromised personally, that he'd done things in Russia that would make him unfit to be president, that he engaged in behavior that would lead to blackmail. This wasn't just about Russia attempting to, manipulate votes. Mm-hmm. It was about Russia setting Donald Trump up, and he was a compromised candidate and president, which was all BS. It was designed to destroy Trump as a person and his entire family. That's what people don't ever tell you in the mainstream media. The Steele dossier was designed to destroy Donald Trump personally.
And by the way, John McCain thought it was real and dropped it off, I think, on Comey's desk.
I know. John McCain was given the Steele dossier, and he turned it over to the FBI, not knowing it to be real or not. It's not an irresponsible thing to do. If somebody gives you a document that alleges bad things, well, you turn it over to the cops. Well, what happened here? The cops were corrupt. Comey and Brennan, I think, wanted the dossier attached to the report. about Russia's involvement, knowing that it was a bunch of BS. So the point here is that when the FBI got the document and started investigating the source of Christopher Steele, the source told the FBI agents in two distinct interviews, this is bar talk. This is hearsay.
I know.
This was reported up the chain, and they went for it anyway.
Senator, appreciate it. We're up against a break, but always great talking to you. It's amazing we're still going through this, but new information's coming down. Senator Lindsey Graham, always great. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ben.
Back in a moment.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What a fantastic audience we had tonight. Washington power brokers, celebrities, Hollywood stars, Ozzy Osbourne. The thing about Ozzy is he's made a lot of big hit recordings. Party with the Animals. Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. Ozzy, Mom loves your stuff.
So that is President Bush at the Washington Correspondents' Dinner. He was the big hit of that dinner. I remember that.
Because he was so likable. Right?
I know. And then he kind of disappeared. You know, he had a tough life. But hey, listen, if you look at the type of life this guy's living, and he lived that long, you got to feel as though you've got to feel fortunate. I mean, this guy had no holes barred for about 50 years.
I know, in so many different chapters of his life. It's sort of incredible, right? He's what, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for two reasons, right? A solo artist and with Black Sabbath, had the reality show. He did his last concert 2 weeks ago, which is incredible.
I'm not sure if this is going to make the Will Cain show, but I just got to remind everyone I'll be on the Will Cain show because Will's out. So I'll be 4 p.m. today and Friday. So that's Eastern time. And thanks so much for this hour for Josh Holmes and Lindsey Graham for joining us. And keep it here on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. Our chance to talk about what's happening locally. John LaVarga is going to be with us, a counsel to the Secretary of Treasury, Scott Bessent. They had huge news yesterday about a big trade deal, another one coming, and another one could be also forthcoming. Also, Bhatia Unger Sargon is standing by, a columnist with the Free Press, author of Second Class. Also, we're following all the events that are taking place as it happens. We also know the hostage families still being held. Years later in Gaza, they are back today at the White House, and they're asking for some type of break. And it looks like 20-plus are still alive, 50-plus are in their custody when you talk about the dead bodies. And it looks like there's a degree of optimism of some type of breakthrough, but we've heard that before. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Do you specifically condemn Hamas, a designated terrorist organization?
It's disingenuous to ask about condemning Hamas while Palestinians are the ones being starved now by Israel.
So Colombia finally cracks down on their campus rioters, and their ringleader admits when it comes to Hamas, he's a fan. Mahmoud Khalil not only does not apologetic, he is pro-terror and is suing Trump for wrongful imprisonment.
Number two.
But I just signed the largest trade deal in history. I think maybe the largest deal in history with Japan. I always say it has to be great for everybody. It's a great deal. A lot different from the deals in the past, I can tell you that.
President Trump on a roll as he reels in two more trade deals before the August 1st deadline, Japan and the Philippines, as he segues today to AI and how he plans to harness this mighty technology.
Number one.
It's the art of deflection coming from former President Obama as well as his friends who are still in Congress today, and Senator Warner and Congressman Jim Himes, really all basically saying that exact same statement.
Yep, Tulsi Gabbard. Obama hits back hard at Trump after Tulsi Gabbard exposes papers revealing an alleged plot to overthrow Trump as he took over power in his first term, with more whistleblowers and papers set to be released. We go over what's new and what is not. And now we understand that Tulsi Gabbard's responded to President Trump pretty strongly, President Obama pretty strongly, who spoke to a spokesperson and basically says it's all nonsense. Bhatia Unger Sargon joins us now. Bhatia, first off, what level of interest do you have in this new revelation that Tulsi Gabbard's bringing forward?
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. I have to say, I feel extremely angry that this is the top story instead of this amazing trade deal with Japan. And I blame both sides, obviously, like the media, but I also blame President Trump for this. He's putting points on the board. He's revolutionizing American manufacturing, revolutionizing the American dream for working class Americans. And instead of just sort of saying, look, I don't care about Epstein, I'm focused on delivering on my promises, which he is in a historic way, we're sort of mired in this 10-year-old litigation against President Obama. I just feel a little bit like, why? What, I mean, I get that, you know, there's this influencer set who's obsessed with Epstein, but average Republican voters do not care about that. They care about the wins that they are seeing from this president. So I really kind of feel upset about this, that this has become such a big story.
So a couple of things that you have. You have this degree of Trump supporters that want to see RFK, MLK, RFK Jr., JFK, the situation, did we land on the moon? We want to find out, get to the bottom of that big mystery. And they want to say, oh, the Epstein files, when they came out a couple of weeks ago and said, we're done. There was some outrage in the podcast circles, the influencer circles. So the DNI also was pursuing what really happened with they feel as though they didn't get to the bottom of what happened the first time around. So they bring it forward. But I think you could do two at one time. Epstein files, I don't think have anything to do with what goes on in the country today. There's not one thing besides a level of interest on Epstein. But when it comes to what President Obama was up to and his whole staff is up to, which they might still be up to, I have a level of interest in that. I just don't know what's new yet.
Yeah, I don't see that they've really come out with a smoking gun. The thing that happened was 66% of Democrats became convinced of the thing that the report that was suppressed said wasn't true. So 66% of Democrats were convinced that Putin had actually changed the voting tallies. But that is very different than what I think was explicitly said by Democrats who were saying more that there was an influence campaign. So I you know, to me, there's not a lot of there. What there is a lot of there are the amazing wins that this president is accomplishing on behalf of the American people. And while you're right, Brian, of course, you know, we can think about two things at once. At the end of the day, there's only going to be one top news story. And this huge Japan deal was just buried under this nonsense about Obama being, you know, a traitor. And the thing that I think your listeners have to understand is this trade deal with Japan is an absolute game changer. And there is only one person on planet Earth who could have gotten the Japanese to cave, to open their markets
I
to us while keeping a 15% tariff. I mean, hello. It's a new day in America. And I just want that to be the thing we think about. The thing we're focused on is the very unifying policies of this president rather than the divisive language.
Here is President Trump yesterday, cut 19.
But I just signed the largest trade deal in history. I think maybe the largest deal in history with Japan. And that was done with Japan. They had their top people here, and we worked on it long and hard, and it's a great deal for everybody. I always say it has to be great for everybody. It's a great deal. A lot different from the deals in the past, I can tell you that. But we're doing really well as a country. We're strong. We have a lot of money flowing in. The tariffs are kicked in better than anybody other than me and a few of the people in the room thought could happen.
So there he is. He has that. And I think the EU could be next. They have officials in town. What are you hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny when the president said it's good for everyone. It's not exactly true. It's really good for us and really bad for Japan. This was like a tiny moment in time based on their political struggles right now that this deal could have happened, where honestly, we screwed them in such a great way for us. So it's just a very, very revolutionary, important moment. And of course, now the EU looking at this, looking how far the president got, you know, with the UK, with Japan, with the Philippines and Indonesia, these are all back doors for the Chinese. So he's really doing what he said he was going to do and what he said was possible and what all the naysayers said would never happen. It would lead to inflation. I mean, it was all nonsense, Brian. I would sit there on this panel on CNN and people being like, the American consumer is going to see a $2,000 increase a month. All nonsense. And the president just had the confidence to do what he alone could have pulled off. It's really incredible.
So I want to bring you to Mahmoud Khalil. He's a 33-year-old graduate student who graduated from Columbia and was detained in the hope of deporting him. He is now out and considering himself a celebrity, meeting with a myriad of Democratic officials, mostly squad members. But he did an interview on CNN, and they're frustrated because it turns out he loves Hamas. Cut 26.
Do you specifically condemn Hamas, a designated terrorist organization in the United States, not just for their actions on October 7th?
I condemn the killing of all civilians, full stop. But what I don't want to get into is... No, I am very clear with condemning all civilians. I'm very straight in my position in that part. But it's disingenuous to ask about condemning Hamas while Palestinians are the ones being starved now by Israel. It's not condemning October 6th, where 260 Palestinians were killed by Israel before October 7. So I hate this selective outrage of condemnation, because this is not, this wouldn't lead to a constructive conversation.
So he goes on. He does not condemn Hamas because he's pro-Hamas. Why are we going out of our way to pretend he's not pro-Hamas? This should be reason to throw him out. He lied on his application for a student and for green card.
Well, 100%. I mean, first of all, let's just debunk the lies there. Palestinians are starving because Hamas has been stealing all of the aid and hoarding it and then selling it on the market at hugely marked up prices. 200 Palestinians were killed on October 6th. There was an upsurge of terrorist activity in the West Bank called Lion's Den, an alternative to Hamas. So, you know, it's just nonsense, everything he said. But, yeah, this guy obviously supports Hamas. We have video footage of him distributing leaflets praising the Al-Aqsa flood, which was Hamas's name for October 7th. And even in his retelling of it, he says, I don't owe it to you to condemn Hamas. You do. You are a guest here. You owe it to us. You owe it to the people of this country who are unbelievably pro-Israel to prove to us that you are not an enemy of this country. By the way, Brian, here's the worst part about it. The worst part is this is exactly the same rhetoric we got from Mamdani. I wouldn't use globalize the intifada, but I understand and respect people who would. And it's worse than that. This is the Democratic Party's position on Israel now. The majority of Democratic voters now sympathize more with the Palestinians than with Israel. They love Mamdani. They support Mahmoud Khalil. He may have only met with squad members, but this view is the view that has become mainstream in that party. It's utterly horrifying.
Listen to what else he said. Cut 31.
It's Marco Rubio who's supporting these like new Nazi parties in Europe. It's the Trump administration who's meeting with Holocaust deniers. It's not me. We're simply calling for the rights of the Palestinian people, for their justice and freedom.
Really?
Why is this person here? I mean, like the chutzpah of calling our Secretary of State, who got votes from 99 senators out of 100, total bipartisan support, and you're saying he meets with Nazis, he defends Nazis? Why is this person here? This has nothing to do with free speech. This has to do with immigration policy. The Democrats are defending and propping up an open border, cheap slave labor, and people who support terrorists.
It gets worse. Cut 32.
I know you filed, Mahmoud, a $20 million claim against the Trump administration, alleging you were falsely imprisoned in dehumanizing conditions and maliciously prosecuted. What are you hoping to achieve with this filing?
Simply, I'm hoping to achieve accountability, because there should be accountability for such overreach. The Trump administration should feel the heat of their actions, and they can't just simply like kidnap people from the streets and throw them in jails in Louisiana, 1,400 miles away. So, simply accountability.
So they got to bring this guy back to court and get him out. I'm wondering if a Colombia feels the embarrassment, certainly the pressure to do something. After all, it's cost him at least $400 million. Attitudes like that.
You know, Brian, after that beautiful Jewish couple, actually she was Jewish, he was Christian, was killed outside the Jewish museum in D.C., CNN had on somebody who had been there, a witness, a Jewish young Jewish man. And he said, I saw in his eyes the shooter, the killer, alleged killer, Elias Rodriguez, who screamed, free Palestine, I did it for Gaza. This young Jewish man said, I saw in his eyes what I saw in the eyes of campus protesters. And the CNN host was said, well, you don't mean to suggest that the campus protesters, you know, would approve of something like this. And this young man said, I went to Columbia. Like, enough said. You get what I'm saying, Brian? Like,
absolutely.
Enough said, you know?
Of course. I mean, it's a joke. I mean, but I think that I never thought this administration would be able to crack down on higher education like this. But they're being relentless, and I love it. They're beating up on Harvard. They're going to go right up the courts. If this judge decides that Harvard gets their money back, they're going to go appeal it immediately. Columbia is in negotiations. George Mason's now under fire. University of Virginia ousted their president, who would refuse to abide by the non-DEI practices that is now an executive order mandate. So I think they're making progress. Do you see that?
Absolutely. And I think this is so popular. You know, people for a long time, I think, felt accurately the contempt that these elite universities and graduates had for working class Americans. Christian Americans, religious Americans, and now to actually see somebody fighting on their behalf against these corrupt elites. And every time Trump says, he's like, he looks at the camera, he goes, we were giving them $5 billion. Can you believe that? I think that's how most Americans feel. They just cannot believe that we were paying billions of dollars to these institutions so that they could educate the future apparatchiks of the Chinese Communist Party and protect and educate and brainwash American students into, you know, supporting Hamas and protect people like this Mahmoud Khalil.
All right. Thanks so much, Bhatti Unger Sargon. Interesting times. Appreciate it. 1-866-408-7669. Then I'll get some calls. Oklahoma and Orlando standing by. We're also going to have a chance to go inside these trade deals with the executive counselor to the Secretary of Treasury, Scott Bessent. Joe LaVornia will be joining us. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Fox News Audio presents Unsolved with James Patterson. Every crime tells a story, but some stories are left unfinished.
Somebody knows.
Real cases, real people. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What is more important is what the Democrats are saying, and Obama's spokesman said tonight, which is, of course, everybody knew there was Russian meddling in the 2016 election. Well, that's a tell, because the argument here, the allegation here, is not that there wasn't any meddling. It's that the Obama administration and President Obama possibly himself grossly exaggerated the inconsequential nature of the Russian meddling, tried to make it sound much more consequential that the Russians were trying to throw the election for Trump and that Trump was somehow criminally involved with the Russians. And then these intelligence officials fed all of this information repeatedly, December of 16 and January of 17, and then continuously through the Trump administration, that there was a criminal conspiracy when they knew there wasn't.
That is Julian Epstein, Democratic lawyer, a long time worked in the House, now is doing some analysis on the new information that's coming through. There's more new stuff on FoxNews.com right now, Fox News Digital. So check it out. It says the unusual effort that President Obama made when it comes to intelligence. They tried to destroy Donald Trump's term in office and maybe end it. Jim, listen on WDBO in Orlando. Hey, Jim.
Oh, hey, this is Jay, actually. First off, your previous guest, I kind of like her.
She's great.
Yeah, she's awesome. Second thing is, I want to talk to you about the Jeffrey Epstein thing from an independence point of view.
Yep.
For a long time, the Epstein list was weaponized. I would see online that conservatives would call liberals. They would use it as a thing, say, oh, you're a pedophile supporter, and the Clintons are on the list. Oprah Winfrey's on the list. Jimmy Kimmel was accused to be on the list by Aaron Rodgers. They would use this as like some sort of, you know, to poke and prod. Now that the list is, you know, it was on, you know, Pam Bondi's desk in January, we're ready to see it. You know, like people are. So that's where their interest is, particularly if it deals with children, if they were hurt. The last thing is, you're being a little bit deceitful when you say, you know, the liberal president or whoever didn't release the information about it. This was a federal, it was a state crime in 2006 and 8.
What liberal president?
A federal thing in 2019.
What liberal president?
Trump's presidency.
When Trump was president, you said that this stuff was out already? I don't get it. All right. When we come back, we go inside the trade deals.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
He's so busy,
he'll make your head spin.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
But I just signed the largest trade deal in history. I think maybe the largest deal in history with Japan. And that was done with Japan. They had their top people here, and we worked on it long and hard, and it's a great deal for everybody. I always say it has to be great for everybody. It's a great deal. A lot different from the deals in the past, I can tell you that. But we're doing really well as a country. We're strong. We have a lot of money flowing in. The tariffs are kicked in better than anybody other than me and a few of the people in the room thought could happen.
So, by the way, the president put on Truth Social some of the details of the Japanese deal he was referring to yesterday evening. Japan will invest, his direction, $550 billion into the U.S. economy and will receive 90% of the profits, he says. The deal will create hundreds of thousands of jobs. Perhaps more importantly, Japan will open their country to trade, including cars and trucks, rice and certain other agricultural products and other things. Japan will pay reciprocal tariffs of the U.S. at 15%. Now, they got the Philippines a little bit earlier, and there are also rumors that the EU is close. Let's bring in Joe Lavagna. He is the counselor to the Secretary of Treasury, Scott Bessent, Managing Director and Chief Economist at SMBC Nikko Securities. That's where you were. Joe, welcome. First off, could you put in perspective,
thank you, Brian.
What was the hardest part about the trade deal with Japan?
Oh, I don't know if there was the hardest part. As Secretary Bessent highlighted many times, President Trump drives a hard bargain. He's got leverage, and the trade negotiators wanted to make the best deal for the U.S. And I think as the president has described, the deal worked out quite well. So, again, the deadlines are effectively were met, and the U.S. will benefit from it. You mentioned Japan. We also had Indonesia, Philippines. So a lot of these countries are falling into line, as the Secretary Bessent had highlighted earlier.
And the market's happy. It's up 244 points so far.
Yeah, the markets. Yeah, Brian, I mean, the markets are thrilled. I mean, you've got all-time high in equities. You've got recession risk, which is de minimis. And that's a little bit esoteric here, but if you look at credit spreads in the market, which is basically how much more do companies, U.S. companies, have to pay above the Treasury to borrow, it's very low, reflecting health and confidence in President Trump's policies and the fact that the second half of the year, led by a CapEx comeback, should be a boom.
What do you say, what do you think about the chances of an EU deal that you heard?
Sorry, Brian, can you
repeat
that?
The EU? Is it because they have
That's something, well, I mean, the negotiators obviously have been working very intensely, Secretary Bessent, Secretary Lutnick, and Ambassador Greer. At this point, I can't say where the EU is at this point, but Secretary Bessent did mention the other day that they're in a good place with China. As you know, there's going to be negotiations early next week, and that Secretary Bessent thought that August 1 would likely be a deadline for the others, but we'll have to wait and see what happens.
So you got some numbers that are out there that go inside the economy. Could you tell us what they all mean? For example, Scott Bessent put out on his social media that that we're seeing a CapEx comeback. Business equipment production jumped 11% in quarter two after a 23% gain in quarter one. What does that mean to the everyday person?
Yeah, so Brian, what it means is if you have CapEx, capital expenditures, capital spending, CapEx for sure. It's just the money that businesses, firms invest back in their business. It could be machinery. It could be technology, computers, software. If you own a building business, it could be tractors or anything that you're using capital, if you will, to actually deploy. And what we saw in the first half of the year is the production of business equipment grow combined. If I take those two quarters, it's a 17% annualized rate, which is the fastest, excluding the pandemic rebound. It's the fastest rate since the last two quarters of 1997. And of course, a lot of that is being fueled by the AI boom, which President Trump has helped engineer with things like the Clarity Act and the Genius Act. But what's important and why this CapEx comeback is occurring is in the One Big Beautiful Bill, the full expensing of capital expenditures was going to always be retroactive to inauguration day. So if you're a company and you're debating whether you want to invest in that new piece of machinery, you went ahead and did it in the first and second quarters because you could deduct that expense against your income. Now that the bill is permanent, we should now more permanently benefit from a high level of capital expenditure.
So I guess the one thing that people are wondering about is inflation and the price of all goods. There are some goods that have calmed down. What are you looking for in terms of inflation? I think it was at 2.9% last quarter.
Yeah, the year-over-year rate in the headline CPI is around 2.6, 2.7. It's down quite significantly from where it was last year. The monthly pattern looks even a little bit friendlier, meaning there's downward momentum. You know, this CapEx story, by the way, the reason we care about it is it's going to increase productivity. People will be able to produce more, and that's going to lead to lower inflation. And you combine that with the energy independence and the building and the incentives that were in the One Big Beautiful Bill, that should lower prices. Because we've seen, Brian, to this point, the inflation data, whether it's the consumer price index, the producer price index, import prices, all those figures have basically come in below consensus expectations for 5 months in a row. So we're getting the benefit of the tariffs, which could raise upwards of $300 billion in revenue this year, but we're not seeing the price effects. And given how President Trump engineered the economy in the first term with strong growth and low inflation, we're not worried about inflation. We're going to get the growth, and the inflation rate is going to continue to decline because his policies are supply side driven, which I know you know a little bit about.
I think that's what the Republicans have been pushing for the longest time, and that Joe Biden says does not work.
We're seeing it work, Brian, because in President Trump's first 6 months of the year, a big drop in the inflation rate led to essentially the biggest gain in blue collar wages on record. Well, I shouldn't say it's eclipsed only by so far one tenth stronger reading under President Trump's first term, and that dates back to the 60s with both Republican and Democrat administrations.
So today we're also finding out the president's going to be talking about AI. Last week it was cryptocurrency to set up parameters and some type of structure. David Sachs is leading the charge on that. What do you expect to hear from the president today?
Oh, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what he's going to say other than highlighting some of the accomplishments and how these policies are going to make the U.S. the destination place in the world for capital, foreign capital, and how these tax policies are going to encourage domestic business.
that are going to be unshackled from onerous government regulation, and they're going to be incentivized by the current tax structure to invest, how the U.S. has to be an innovator in all things technology-related, whether it's crypto, artificial intelligence, and just the fact that the U.S. has to build things again. And you know, that's one of the things that we lost our way on in the president's long history of being a serious builder and producer of things. So I was thinking the other day, I was telling somebody about how he got the Wallman Rink in New York done. I mean, that would have taken years, if ever, if it wasn't for President Trump's ability to make things. So I think just this general notion that the economy is back, it will be a golden era, a golden age. And this CapEx story is important, Brian, because I think it really highlights the fact that his policies were already starting to work before even the legislation was fully signed.
I want you to hear what the Treasury Secretary said about what AI means and what today is going to launch. Cut 23.
We are in the middle of this incredible AI boom that, you know, I don't know whether you want to say this is the third, fourth, fifth industrial revolution. So we're seeing the hyperscalers spin like we never have before. And I think what's really gone unheralded here is the Trump administration's emphasis on deregulation. We are making it possible to build things in America again.
And that's one of the goals that you guys did the first time around, too.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, I mentioned onerous business regulation, and then when the Secretary Bessett talks about deregulation, you're allowing people to the freedom and the ability to produce the things that other people want, both here and abroad, at a cheap cost, an inexpensive cost that's affordable, that's of high quality. So that, to me, it all makes sense. And the thing with the AI boom and the hyperscaling, as Secretary Bessent highlighted, is this isn't like years away. It's happening right now. Anybody that has a smartphone knows that you can get all this great information using AI, and the U.S. needs to be the home of the leader, the innovator going forward.
So the one thing that's happening is you also say the blue-collar paychecks are rising fast, second only to the first term. Can you put that in perspective? And by what do you mean by rising?
Yeah, so in the first 6 months of the year, Brian, real blue-collar wages, which essentially is what technically are called non-supervisory production workers. These are people who are working behind the counter, serving meals. They're punching a clock, working on a factory floor. You know, they're the hardcore laborers. They're not the professional and managerial class. They're the people who have suffered significantly over the past handful of decades. In President Trump's first term, we saw their relative wages rise at the fastest rate we'd seen in decades. And what we see right now through the first 6 months of the year is actually an increase of 1.2% in real terms, in inflation-adjusted terms, 1.2%. The fastest gain we've seen in any new administration was under Trump's first term was 1.3%. So they're basically the same. Every other administration has had either very slight increases or actually large declines, owing to the fact that real wages, for decades have been actually declining for this group. So the productivity boom on the CapEx story as it relates to President Trump's tax policies and deregulation are going to keep those wages rising faster. And they'll also get the added benefit, Brian, of benefiting from lower inflation.
He's a counselor to the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent. Joe, just last question for you. Right now, if I did an average on the polls on the big, beautiful law, it's 38% favorability. So how do you change that? Every Republican I talk to is so optimistic it'll change outside Senator Rand Paul when people learn more about it. What's your message to people that have questions?
Well, I think part of the story, Brian, is people don't understand it. They don't have a lot of time. They're working hard. And one of the roles I have is to sort of say, look, this is what we're already seeing in the data, is to talk about how good this bill is. And as that message comes out, and more importantly, Brian, as people's paychecks get bigger and fatter, you're going to see people come around and say, wow, this thing actually has led to a meaningful increase in my living standards, just as we experienced under the first Trump administration.
Joe LaBorna, thanks so much, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. Keep a quick reminder. I'm going to be hosting the Will Cain Show at 4 o'clock today. And One Nation coming up Sunday at 10. We're already putting it together. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
There's no question Kathy Hochul is the worst governor in America. New York leads the nation in out-migration with the highest tax burden and the worst business climate in the country. And in 2026, she needs to be defeated. But after months of deliberating over this and really working through it, I've decided the right thing to do for me and my family and my district is to run for re-election. My seat was determinative of control of the House back in 2022 and again in 2024. I'm one of only three Republicans that won a seat that Kamala Harris also won.
So Mike Lawler, who will be on with us hopefully this week, the congressman decides to stay in Congress. He met with President Trump. He wanted to run for governor. Of course, it's going to be really hard to win as a Republican in New York or Illinois or California. I think New York possible because you saw how close Zeldin got last time and Hochul was unknown and doing terrible. But now we've seen a lot of her and she's awful. And she's the taxes are through the roof, the congestion pricing. Now the first in the country will be a new trend, sadly, just to drive across a city will cost you money. What are going to go in and out of a city, which costs you money? And then we have a situation where you have a governor who can't control a city and a communist about to run a city. So this would have been an opportunity. But Lawler said he met with the president, and he knows he's one of the few people that can win in a state that Kamala Harris won. Now, that opens the door up for Elise Stefanik. She's unbelievably competent, good, and confident, and she will eviscerate Kathy Hochul. The question is, will there be enough Republicans in the state that would vote her way or be open enough? And that's why Long Island, which would be maybe the 18th most populous state on its own if it split off, is stuck because so many people are packed into New York City that seem to always vote Democrat. And that's what's happening locally. But there's a few other things that's happening that is pretty unbelievable, and that is J.D. Vance had a huge fundraiser in Narragansett, made $2.4 million. I mean, that's pretty impressive. And they say that Republicans have outraised Democrats across the board. I mean, this is a time in the off year after the president, Republican or Democratic president, wins. It's usually the other party's turn to do well. Republicans are racking up more cash than Democrats in both parties to fight over in the House. The median Republican targeted by House Democrats campaign raised $860,000. 10 of the nearly three dozen targeted House Republicans raised at least $1 million in the first quarter. Now, just one of the 25 GOP-targeted incumbent Democrats raised that much. Now, if you can't get money to go against Trump, which has been a major way to raise money for Democrats, this is your last time you're going to be able to do it. And you're not able to do it this time? I think this is almost time to panic. So they want to change the subject. They want to talk about the Epstein story. They don't want to talk about the trade deals. They don't want to talk about the economy. They don't want to talk about the big, beautiful bill. They don't want to talk about bombing out Iran's nuclear program. Let's go out to Michael in Oklahoma. Hey, Michael.
Brian, excellent, as we've come to expect from you. Two points I wanted to make, and you've already made one. Well said. That the Epstein allegations with regard to the Democrats trying to propagate that somehow President Trump was involved seriously with Epstein are just more of the same technique that they used with regard to the Russian collusion.
It is, and no one's going to stand for it. It's actually getting the MAGA people to sober up and understand there's no, you know, this might be a conspiracy that doesn't exist, but go ahead.
Well, no, Brian, you touched on it perfectly, and I would just stress that I would say there were two points I was going to make. This was this point is important, but I believe that the Democrats know at this time that President Trump probably has no serious ties, had no serious ties with Epstein. The other point I was going to make, Brian, is I believe Tulsi Gabbard has told the absolute truth, and these people who she said committed treason, I believe, did. I have no reason to question her. And the question that should be asked and must be asked is, would these people who no doubt committed treason, would they also not attempt assassination?
No, let's not even think like that. Michael, thanks for the call. Just follow it. Just keep in mind, she gave out 100 pages last week. More are coming out this week. It's not over. So they're going to get more people. And just a question, if you have a thumb drive with Hillary Clinton's emails on it and you do an investigation of how much secret information was given out and what level, wouldn't you look at the thumb drives? They found a whole bunch weren't even looked at. It's the same FBI that said when he got Hunter Biden's laptop, we're in no rush to look at it, and we're mad at the computer repairman for bringing it in. Something wrong there. See you at 4 o'clock with Will Cain Show.